Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Gift of Grace on the Word 1220. This is Phil Giuliotti here on another awesome Sunday night. And this is the Gift of Grace, where we read and teach God's Word, and we proclaim the kingdom and salvation in Jesus the Messiah. So I hope you've had an awesome week. So here we are in the Advent season. Advent, of course, means we're waiting for the coming. We're waiting for the coming of Messiah. We're waiting for the birth of the human Jesus of Nazareth. In his divinity, of course, he has always existed and always will exist. But we are waiting for the time where, in the process of the incarnation, he was born as a baby in Bethlehem. And so this is why we call it Advent. The Advent actually started in the book of Genesis and went on until the Gospels, the beginning of the Gospels, especially Luke's accounts. But that was the first coming. We are now in the second Advent, waiting for the second coming. And as you know, my opinion is that we don't have too long to wait. The time is literally at hand. So we're not going to speculate on that, and that's what not what this show is about. You'll have to check my YouTube channels to get more information on that. And by the way, if you go to www.giftofgraceministries.org, giftofgraceministries.org, you can hear all the radio shows going back to 2009. And the name of the YouTube channel is One in Messiah, Gift of Grace Ministries. One in Messiah, Gift of Grace Ministries. So today's we're going to do an Advent teaching. Again, we've been doing that the last 3 weeks. And there'll probably, I guess, be one more before we do the Christmas show. But tonight we're going to take an interesting passage from, well, it's going to be centered on a passage from the book of Isaiah, but with a little bit of background. And as you know, everything begins in the garden. Everything begins in the Garden of Eden. And I'm going to go back to Genesis chapter 3. That's right, Genesis, the first book. The first two chapters, of course, are the creation accounts. The third chapter is the fall of Adam and Eve, the fall of man, which causes the various predicaments that we're all in today, whether it's aging or disease or whatever else you're going through. It's all because of Adam and Eve. And it's all because we have Adam's nature, and it's all because we live in a fallen world, because when Adam and Eve sinned, not only were they cursed and all mankind affected after that, but the whole universe was basically cursed. And so we live in a fallen creation, and this is why Paul writes in Romans, all creation is groaning for Jesus to come back. But in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, there's an interesting conversation that goes on between God, the serpent, and Eve. Well, it's not really a conversation because God does all the talking. Adam, as you'll notice, is excluded from this. Adam abdicated his spiritual responsibility when Eve was being tempted by the serpent. And so he is not included in this. That's very interesting. So God is talking, and he says, verse 15, and I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head as you shall bruise his heel. So interesting here. God is going to put a division, a separation between the serpent and the woman, and between his descendants and her descendants. That's interesting. And he describes it as her seed. Now, Eve is a woman. And in ancient thinking, women did not have seed. The seed came from the man. They didn't understand fertilization, of course. Didn't know about eggs and sperms and didn't know the biology of it. But they knew that in order for a baby to be born, a man and a woman both had to be involved. And the man, in some way, fertilized the woman and allowed a new life to begin. This is, of course, human knowledge from the whole span of human existence and human experience. But so here God says, her seed. So someone, and in the next part, he calls this person he. So a man is going to come who is going to be descended from the woman, but is not going to have a human father. And he is going to crush the head of the devil while the devil is trying to nip at his heel. That's kind of like the relative power between Satan and Jesus. You know, Satan, all he can do is nip his heel, but Jesus crushes Satan's head. And so a man is going to come to do this who doesn't have a male, who doesn't have a father. And this is called the first proclamation of the gospel, Genesis 3:15. And of course, as time went on, this messianic promise developed. We get to 2 Samuel in chapter 7. We're not going to read the whole thing, but God tells Samuel, God tells Daniel, God tells David, I'll get it right eventually. God tells David through the prophet Nathan that from his body, from David's body, will come someone who is going to establish the kingdom. And he's going to build a house for my name. And his throne's going to be established forever. And then he adds the remarkable statement, I will be his father, and he shall be my son. So to reiterate what God told Eve and the serpent, a man, called he again, a man is going to come from David. You know, the old English comes that he's going to come from David's loins, in other words, from his reproductive organs. In other words, he's going to be physically related to King David. He is going to come and establish the kingdom. And that's with a capital K. He's going to come and establish the kingdom, and his throne's going to last forever. And God's going to be his father, and he's going to be the son. That's pretty remarkable. So this is where we get the messianic title Son of David, which is so well known, not only in Christianity, is even more well known in Judaism. If you notice in the New Testament, if you notice in the Gospels, many people address Jesus as Son of David. On Palm Sunday, the people say, Son of David, come and save us. So when you call someone Son of David, what you're saying in Hebrew thought is, you are the Messiah. You can heal me because you are the Messiah. You can come and save us because you are the Messiah. You're the Son of David. Now, David had many sons, and they had many sons, and on, but the title Son of David applies to this passage from 2 Samuel, where God says, you want to build me a house? You're not going to build me a house. I'm going to build you a house. This is remarkable. Remember, David wanted to build the temple. In fact, he was upset that he was living in a beautiful palace made out of cedar. Imagine how cool that would have been, how nice it would have smelled. He lived in a palace made of cedar, and the Ark of God lived in a tent. And the tent was, in the city by then. So he says, well, I'm going to build God a house because, you know, he shouldn't be living in a tent. After all, I'm living in this big palace. Well, God tells David, I never told you to build me a house. I've been living in a tent. Went through the whole wilderness in a tent. I've been living in a tent since you've been back in the land. And I like living in a tent. But you are not going to build me a house to live in. You're not going to do that because you have too much blood on your hands. David had done a lot of things, so he was not allowed to build the temple. His son Solomon, of course, would build the temple. But David kind of had it all organized. He got all the materials together. They floated cedar from Lebanon down the rivers toward Jerusalem so that they could use it in the construction. They had the stones that were being quarried. So when Solomon comes on the scene as king, everything's pretty much in motion to build the temple. So God says he's going to build David a house because David's throne is going to last forever. And just as when we think about the Annunciation, where the angel Gabriel talks to Mary about the son who she's going to conceive, and he says that she's going to name him Yeshua, Jesus. Now, his name, of course, Yeshua, means salvation, means God saves. So it's a very appropriate name for him. The angel says, you're going to name him Jesus. You're going to name him Yeshua. And he's going to sit on the throne of his father, David. So the angel Gabriel connects Mary to this prophecy in 2 Samuel, because Joseph and Mary are both descended from David. So Gabriel connects her to this prophecy that from David's loins was going to come the one who was going to shepherd Israel. And it's kind of cool that David was a shepherd, and then Jesus becomes the good shepherd. So all these things are connected. So then let's fast forward to Isaiah chapter 7. Now, this is written about 700 years before any of this is going to come to pass. 700 years before any of this is going to happen. And here we have a story about King Ahaz. We're not going to get into King Ahaz. He was one of the kings of Judah who was a disaster. There were many kings of Judah that were a disaster, and he was one of them. Verse 13 of Isaiah 7. Then he said, "Hear now, O house of David, is it a small thing for you to weary men? But will you weary my God also? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son and call his name Emmanuel." Wow. So here we have God saying through Isaiah that a virgin is going to conceive, she's going to bear a son, and he's going to be called Emmanuel. Now, this is poetic, as you know, because Gabriel doesn't tell Mary, you're going to name the baby Emmanuel. He says, you're going to name the baby Jesus, Yeshua, not Emmanuel, which means God with us. The name means God with us. So when we look at this passage, we see God himself gives a sign. And this is a sign that nobody would conceive of. Nobody would think of such a thing. Nobody would think of such a thing, that a virgin could conceive and bear a son. This is not in the scope of human history. It's not in the scope of even animal life. Reproduction does not occur with just one person. But here, a virgin is going to conceive, which means, again, going back to Genesis 3:15, the son who is going to result from this conception is not going to have a human man, not going to have a father in the human sense involved in the process. So again, connected to Genesis, connected to David, because although God through Isaiah is talking to King Ahaz, who was a disaster, but like I say, we're not going to get into that. They all know that the real king is coming. Ahaz may be a disaster at this point, but at some point in the future, the real king is coming. And this title of Emmanuel, of course, is what's fascinating here, because it means God with us. No one had ever thought of such a thing. No one in the whole scope of Old Testament history, from Genesis through all of the Torah, through all of the prophets, could ever conceive of God living with us. And why was that? Because there always was a separation between God and the people. When you read through the Torah, especially when you read in Exodus about how the sanctuary is to be set up, you see right away that there are holy things Then there are less holy things, and then there's the people. And the holiest thing is behind a big, thick veil. There's a separation, because in the front is the very presence of God over the Ark of the Covenant, with his covenant, with his law inside of that ark. And then there is a veil which separates the unholy people from the holy thing. There had always been a separation. Throughout the Torah, God sets conditions for how he is to be approached, how he is to be worshiped, what rituals need to be done. It's not voted on by some committee of people. It's presented in the revelations to Moses, who then writes it all down. Moses is the lawgiver. He's the mediator of that old covenant. And that covenant, of course, is sealed in blood as well, but it's the blood of animals. And please start to study the Torah. You don't have to study it in the depth that an observant Jewish person would, but you should familiarize yourself with the basic concepts. In fact, if you go to that site, Gift of Grace Ministries, you will see notes and some audio for the Torah class that I put together for Christians who don't know anything about the Torah. Because once you understand the law, then you can understand grace. So this is going to be literally God living with us. It's going to be God living not only with our humanity, but in our humanity. Because Messiah is going to have both natures. He's going to share and experience everything about human life. He is going to literally share all of human experience. In fact, in John's gospel, I love the first chapter of John, where it says, the word became flesh and dwelt among us. He refers to Jesus as the word. You know, when the gospel starts out, he talks about how in the beginning the word was with God and the word was God. It's word with a capital W. The word was God. Jesus is called the word. And the word became flesh and dwelt among us as we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. So this again goes to the word is begotten by the Father, and we beheld him. So here John's talking about we beheld a human man who was the word who was God. So again, Genesis, 2 Samuel, Isaiah, and now wrapped up in the beginning of John's gospel, the sentence there about he became flesh and dwelt among us, you know, in the Greek, it means that he pitched his tent with us. He lived with us. He tabernacled with us. The word tabernacle comes from the word for tent. And interestingly, another way we know he's human is in Luke's gospel, after the what's commonly called the finding in the temple, where after 3 days they find 12-year-old Jesus in the temple, and he's answering questions from the teachers and asking them questions. It says when he went back to Nazareth, he grew in wisdom and stature. So he grew in wisdom. So he was growing as a boy, as a teenager, and then as a man. And stature, he was getting taller as he grew up. So just like when you see a kid grow up today and then somebody who hasn't seen him for a while says, wow, you got big, and wow, you're smart. And people said this about Jesus, wow, look, he got really tall. If you believe that the Shroud of Turin was Jesus's burial cloth, I believe it is. I'm not saying that you have to believe that. But if you believe that it is, the man who is there on that cloth is actually quite tall. I forgot the exact height, but he's almost 6 feet tall, which would be very unusual for a man of that era a Jewish man of that era, but he grew in wisdom and stature. And then in the book of Hebrews, the writer tells us he was made like his brethren. So he's made like his brethren. So it's a real body with real heredity. In order to do the plan of salvation, he had to have both natures. In order to be the perfect sacrifice, he had to have both natures. And in his humanity, he had to keep the law perfectly. And as I always like to point out, had Jesus left the house in the morning after sunrise and not had a prayer shawl on, he would be violating God's law, because every man has to wear a prayer shawl. And if you know Jewish men who are observant, you sometimes see the fringes of the prayer shawl sticking out from their shirts. Well, Jesus would have worn a prayer shawl, or else he couldn't be the Messiah. So he had both natures. Also in Hebrews 2:14, it says, "Inasmuch then as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, he himself likewise shared in the same, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is, the devil." So in his humanity, Jesus had to die and then rise in order to destroy death. So he had to become like his brothers in order to be the eternal high priest. So all these things, Genesis to 2 Samuel to Isaiah to John's gospel to the book of Hebrews, tied together that the idea that Jesus the Messiah is 100% God and 100% man, or else he can't be the Messiah. And so this is what we're waiting for. We have a woman, a young woman who's a virgin, who conceives and bears the Messiah, who has both natures. She gives birth to the God-man. She does not give birth to human Jesus, who then somehow has divinity infused in him later. She gives birth to the God-man. One of the heresies of the church, ancient church, was, well, Jesus was born and he was an exceptionally good man. And then when he was 30 years old, you know, the Holy Spirit somehow came on him and he then had divinity infused in him and then became the God-man. Well, no, Mary gave birth to the God-man. And this is what we're anticipating during this time of Advent, because this is what we are looking forward to, because it's the plan of salvation, because ultimately it's going to lead to Jesus preaching the truth, proclaiming the gospel, proclaiming the kingdom, and then his sacrifice on the cross, which is to remove sin. It's the blood atonement that the Torah talks about to remove sin. Then we have the death at that point of his physical body, and then the resurrection on the third day, which was the Feast of First Fruits, which then conquers death, and he becomes the first fruit, as Paul points out. We're all going to go through that resurrection, but he's the first fruit. And so this is a very profound time as we anticipate these things. It's a very profound time that we have to put in our minds, reflect on what actually happened to make this plan of salvation, and what actually happens through the whole life and sacrifice of Jesus that allows us to be saved. And it's okay to do the stuff with the kids, and it's okay to have Santa Claus, and it's okay to do the stuff. But now the stuff has totally overwhelmed what's actually happening, has totally overwhelmed what this is really all about. And we have to prevent that from happening. And we, as the remnant that's left, have to speak out about what this holiday really is, what this holiday really commemorates. We don't know if he was born on the 25th. Most likely was not. But whether he was or he wasn't, this is a time to reflect on these things and to celebrate the fact that Messiah is born as human Jesus of Nazareth. Oh, I hear the music playing already. Wow. Well, thanks for listening to another Advent show. We'll probably go on with this again next week in some form. Well, we'll read and teach God's word, and we'll proclaim the kingdom and salvation in Jesus the Messiah. So hope you have an awesome week.